You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although you went to get the latest generation smartphone, you left the store with a new laptop as well, and that came with a new printer, free with a rebate. Your old laptop may have been working fine, but there's always the pressure to upgrade. What happens to the electronics that you are replacing? Most of them wind up in city landfills, but what about if we take it to a recycling center? Should we assume that the reusable parts will be recycled and the rest will be disposed of in a responsible manner? Joining us to discuss the state of e-waste disposal is Lauren Roman, Managing Director of Transparent Planet, an organization focused on electronic waste research. Her report on how small changes in the marketplace can affect the growth issue of e-waste, mountainous heaps of toxic detritus wreaking havoc on the environment, was cited in an article by Ian Urbina that was published last Monday in the New York Times. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show. Hello.
Hello, thank you.
Let's suppose I run a small business of 100 employees and we've invested in new computers and want to dispose of the old ones. We reach out to an electronic e-waste recycling firm, which picks them up. Can you tell us what happens after that?
Well, sure. A recycler will, in most cases, come to your location and pack things up and bring them back to their facility, and they'll look for things that can be refurbished and resold and try to get as much reuse out of it as possible. And what can't be reused gets torn down and separated into different metals, steel, aluminum, copper, precious metals off of circuit boards, so on and so forth. And then there's also hazardous components. There's batteries. There's the leaded glass and the old CRTs that were in our old television sets and so forth. And in the best case scenario, all of that is properly recycled and none of it winds up in a landfill or sitting anywhere in storage.
Well, you said in the best case scenario. So how often does it work out in the best way?
I think it works out in the best way a lot of the time. There are some new certification programs for electronics recyclers that have helped. But the problem is that it is very difficult. There's no laws that require that, like there are for hazardous waste, that require that materials get tracked from an electronics recycler. So, unfortunately, a lot of times there is material that's collected and it's sent to a recycler may demonstrate to a customer that it's going to certain places by showing them sample paperwork that maybe they sent one or two shipments there, but then a lot of the material will go to a place that they know that their customers would not want it to be, and that could either be exported to a third world country or it could be stashed away in a warehouse if that's cheaper than paying to properly dispose of that material.
And in Ian Urbina's article in last week's New York Times, he wrote about an electronics recycling company in California that abandoned a warehouse filled to the rafters with tens of thousands of old computer monitors and televisions. What's left is a toxic hazard for the state to deal with. How common is that?
Well, it's more common than is being realized, and that was really the purpose of the report that I published in December. There was a group of 10 recyclers that focus on recycling CRT products. CRT is a cathode ray tube, and that's that big heavy tube that was inside of our old TV sets, and they were. They because they're the ones that process the glass tubes and the glass, they were being asked by recyclers that, and a lot of these recyclers are involved with state take-back programs. Those are states that have laws requiring that electronics get recycled. And so consumers have, there's collection events all over the state, and consumers can go in and drop off their electronics, and the electronics go for recycling. And what was happening was these recyclers that can recycle the glass were being called in by other recyclers that were getting these state contracts, and they were looking at these, they were saying, hey, come in, look at all this glass I have stored up. I want you to recycle this material for me. How much are you going to pay me? Or okay, if you have to charge me, how much are you going to charge me? And they were looking to get rid of it for prices that were really, really cheap. And the glass processor said, no way. You know, there's transportation involved. There's responsible recycling involved. And it's going to cost you, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 cents a pound, just depending upon the condition of the glass. And so the recycler said, well, no can do. So it's just sitting there. So that problem of storage of glass is becoming a big, big problem in the United States.
Now, that's not just regular glass, isn't it? Hasn't it been, isn't it leaded glass?
It is leaded glass, and it fails the hazardous waste test for lead, which means if it winds up in a landfill, it can leach and contaminate if it winds up in a solid waste landfill. So that's why the federal government passed the CRT rule requiring proper management of CRTs. Obviously, the people that are holding on to this material and not letting it flow into a responsible waste recycling stream are violating that.
Now, people...
So,
go ahead.
No, that's okay.
People who live in towns where they bring all their garbage to some center, they just drop the stuff off and then expect the town to take care of it. But if you live in a city like New York and you have a TV that's no longer working or a DVD player that you want to replace, it's hard to figure out where to take it. And if you don't have a car, as many New Yorkers don't, you're not about to take this a huge TV set onto the subway or a bus and travel across town to the place that's really
an
inconvenience.
Come on, what kind of environmentalist are you?
I'm just wondering, could you just leave this stuff out in front of your house with the regular garbage?
Well, in some states you can. A lot of states have been implementing landfill bans so that this material doesn't wind up in a landfill. Unfortunately, well, first of all, what they do find is when they do implement landfill bans, the recycling rate goes way, way up. So it's, you know, extremely important that states look at this. Unfortunately, last week, for the first time ever, the Senate in the state of West Virginia voted to repeal a landfill ban because they said it was too hard to recycle the electronics. What people have to understand is that it has the CRT glass and other components in electronics, like the solder on circuit boards and batteries and so on and so forth, they are hazardous when they are in the landfill. So it's not just like plastic or other glass or aluminum where you say, oh, let's recycle it because it's a good thing to do. It conserves resources. It saves landfill space. It's also necessary to recycle this material because it's hazardous waste if it's disposed of. The problem is that under our federal hazardous waste rules, homeowner-generated waste is exempt from all the hazardous waste rules. So you could put poison in your trash, and you're not violating the law. So that's why the landfill bans are so important for electronic waste, because they have to remember that it's not just a commodity that the market fluctuates, and maybe if there's not a good market for glass, we're just going to say, oh, well, for now we're just going to have to landfill it. And I'm talking about non-hazardous glass or aluminum or newspapers. And that has happened throughout the history of recycling, is that there have been times where we have had to go back to landfilling those materials, but they're not hazardous.
My guest is Lauren Roman, Managing Director of Transparent Planet. We're talking about unwanted electronic gear that's rising in toxic piles, inspired by an article that was in the New York Times last week. What percentage of e-waste is toxic?
Oh, boy, that's a good question.
Because you mentioned copper wires and some other things. I imagine they're not a problem. But is much of the stuff that's going into the more sophisticated equipment we use today toxic on one level or another, especially the stuff that uses rare metals?
Well, the bulk of the material is usually not toxic because, I mean, if you look at a PC, for example, it's mainly either plastic or steel. And then inside you have circuit boards and batteries. So on a weight basis, it's a smaller percentage. If you look at a cell phone, on the other hand, their cell phones actually have a good amount of residual value, even if they're broken, because there are circuit boards in there that have valuable components on them, like items that contain rare earth metals that you mentioned.
Are computers more toxic than television sets or printers?
No, not necessarily. Some printers are mainly plastic. You've got a toner cartridge in the printer, which in most cases is not hazardous under federal law. But if you've ever messed with toner, it's something that you wouldn't want in your drinking water. And so it depends on the item. There are things that are more toxic. Certainly the old TVs and computer monitors with the cathode ray tubes in them have 7 or 8 pounds of lead per average size unit. So those are particularly toxic, and there is a lot of lead on circuit boards. And batteries have all kinds of hazardous material in them. Also, even in newer products like laptops, a lot of them have a little thin fluorescent bulb that contains mercury. That's what lights up your screen. So we've moved away from the leaded CRT tube technology, but we haven't been able to figure out how to completely eliminate hazardous components in our electronics.
And you say when they go to dump sites, they are dangerous. Is that because they affect the health of people who live near them?
Not necessarily. It's mostly that it shouldn't be exposed to rainwater because it can leach out. And it's not an air problem. If they wind up in a solid waste incinerator that has not been designed to scrub off, all of the material that might be coming out of electronics when you're burning them, certainly they don't belong in solid waste incinerators either, that can be a problem. And let's face it, if you're throwing this material into the trash, it's going to go to one or the other. It's going to go to a landfill or a solid waste incinerator. It doesn't belong in either place. And the solid waste incinerators wind up spending a lot of money on treating the ash before they can landfill it if a lot of electronics had been burned with the garbage, because it contaminates the ash, and they have to test the ash before they dispose of it in a solid waste landfill.
That leads me to ask the question that Barbara from Montclair, New Jersey, has just called in. She points out that New Jersey incinerates the majority of its trash. What about the incineration side of disposal? We kind of answered that. But they also have a ban on waste disposal. People can just hide it in a garbage bag and nobody will know.
That's true. And it comes down to people taking personal responsibility for the products that they consume. So if you're going to go out and buy a cell phone or a laptop or a TV, we can't have this one-way mentality. We have to take ownership of that. We have to become stewards of the products that we buy and make sure that we are going to responsibly dispose of that material. And a lot of people do, but there's a lot of public education required.
Well, I'm going to take a little break, and when we come back, I want to know how responsible the manufacturers are for all of this, and perhaps they might play a role in helping us dispose of this e-waste. My guest is Lauren Roman, who's managing director of Transparent Planet. Their study was used by Ian Urbina in an article you may have seen last Monday in the New York Times about e-waste. Stay with us for more. We are back with Lauren Roman, managing director of Transparent Planet, talking about disposal of e-waste. And Lauren, one of our listeners, John, has asked on our show page if these TVs wind up in other countries.
Yes, they do. The CRT rule, which was passed a few years ago, does restrict the export of CRTs to particularly to third world countries. And there are things that recyclers need to do in terms of notifying the EPA prior to shipping material to those countries. But there are hundreds, if not thousands, of brokers out there that know their way around these things that can still manage to take container loads of non-working CRT products and ship them to third world countries. And that's been well documented and continues to be documented by the Basel Action Network, which is a nonprofit NGO located here in Seattle.
Kathleen from the Bronx called in to ask, once this toxic material is collected, if it's done correctly, where does it go?
Well, the steel goes to steel mills, and the copper goes to copper smelters, and aluminum goes to aluminum smelters, and the plastic goes to plastic recyclers, and the batteries go to places that have the technology to properly recover all the hazardous and valuable metals in batteries, and so on and so forth. The leaded glass right now, 80% of the glass that's being recycled in the United States is going to the last TV and monitor producer in the world that is still producing products that contain these old heavy CRT tubes, and that is in India. And this is what's really scary, is because eventually, I mean, when was the last time you went to Best Buy and saw a big, heavy, old CRT monitor product there? They haven't been in there in years. Nobody wants them anymore. So if they're not making new ones, then they're not consuming all the leaded glass that came out of the old ones. So 80% of all of our glass, leaded glass that's coming out of our CRTs, is going to be made into new products in India. They could decide any day that the market just isn't there anymore and that they have to halt production. And if we're not building new capacity to handle this glass in the United States, then where are we going to put 80% of the glass that we're currently shipping for recycling? It's a big, big problem.
We invite our listeners to join in this discussion. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Of course, you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or reach us through Facebook. Or tweet us. Our handle is @LeonardLopate. Wait, previous generations would never have thought to replace something that still worked perfectly well. How much of the e-waste problem can be blamed on the notion that newer is better? Someone looks at your computer and asks, when did you buy that dinosaur?
Well, that's true. And, you know, it's hard to think that there isn't a plan here to make our electronics become obsolete faster than we would like them to become obsolete. But that's the way it is. That's what consumers want, and the market response to consumer demand. And the technology is just accelerating at such a rapid pace. I mean, think of what your cell phone looked like, the one that you had maybe 4 years ago. It probably is completely different than what you're using now. So even though that phone still worked, you know, aside from the abuse that you'll take from your friends for carrying around a big, heavy old block
with a flip top,
you decide that they're, yeah, exactly. You decide that they're, you know, that there are new features that your friends now have that you say, gee, you know, that really is a great function. I do need to get a new phone.
In fact, they keep on developing more and more apps, and you keep on needing to get newer and newer phones. And if you want a telephone to talk back at you, then you got to get an even newer phone. We have a call from Carol from, where are you from, Carol? From Brooklyn? Hi, you're
yes,
on the air.
From your old neighborhood in Brooklyn.
Okay. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I just wanted to give you some information one place and one event for recycling e-waste. One is the Lower East Side Ecology Center has a permanent place in Gowanus. It's 469 President Street on the corner of President and Nevins. And I've bought stuff there myself. It's a great place, and they take every kind of electronics.
But what, you don't walk it down the street, Carol?
No, I you know that. I have a car. So, but I could take car service. It wouldn't be very much expensive.
Okay.
Not that far. And the other one,
okay,
you still have to be able to get there is every spring the New York City Department of Sanitation has New York City Safe Disposal events, and people can find out for their borough at NYC.gov/safe-disposal. In Brooklyn, it's on Sunday, April 7th at Prospect Park and Coney Island Avenue.
Well, thank you for calling us, Carol, but that does make my point. There's one in Brooklyn, there's one in Manhattan, there's one in the Bronx. These are huge places. Queens is even larger, and there's one place. And I suspect that some people will not have a difficulty getting to these places. But it seems to me that since this is a real serious problem, we should be implementing a larger program. But isn't government part of the problem? Isn't the federal government, for example, one of the world's largest producers of e-waste?
Yes, they are. And unfortunately, with some of the problems that we're having right now, the federal government has, when I say the federal government, I'm talking about the US EPA, has decided that it's a state problem and that they don't have the resources and that it might not be their neck of the woods to be getting involved with this. And meanwhile, every state that has passed a take-back law, which allows consumers to go to collection events and get rid of their material for free, has gone to the federal government and said, we know we have problems with our programs. We know that we have stockpiling of CRT glass. We know that there are, activities going on that need to be addressed, and we need some leadership and we need some guidance, and the federal government has decided not to do anything. But regarding Carol's call, I just wanted to say that there are opportunities. There are a lot of opportunities to recycle. And I'm not going to say that living in a place like New York City makes it easy. That for sure is not the case. But the problem is how does an individual company or an individual person know that the recycler that they're bringing their material to is doing the right thing with it? Mm-hmm. This has been going on for years and years and years, that since the Basel Action Network first went to China and discovered what was happening with all this hazardous e-waste that's being shipped to third world countries. And now, with the CRT stockpiling issue, we're finding out that it's happening right here in the United States. And what the
are there certain regions that are most affected?
Yes. The states that actually are more progressive and have take-back laws, because they're removing so much of this from the solid waste stream, they have the bigger problems with recycling. But I'm not faulting them for that, because I certainly, give them a lot of credit for having taken that step forward and passing these laws. But the problem is, with hazardous waste, all of the material, under law, all of the material is tracked to final destination. And with electronics recycling, for some reason, nobody has made the decision that this material needs to be tracked to the final destination. And a lot of recyclers have really good tracking programs, and they show when they receive material, and they can show auditors and customers paperwork of where they're sending the material. But the problem is nobody's following that material to the final destination, and nobody is checking with the places of where that recycler is saying that he's sending material to say, you know what, I'm doing an audit of a recycler, and they say that they sent you 100,000 pounds of CRT glass last month or whenever it was. Did you receive that material? That's the only way to know. So my company, I'm working on developing this tracking system to do just that, to confirm that the material actually goes where it's supposed to go.
A listener, Cindy, said on our show page, automobile makers will also need to come up with a plan on what to do with the batteries in their hybrids. Seems like we trade one environmental negative impact for another.
And battery recycling is very important, but if batteries can be recycled properly, the technology is there. Batteries have been recycled for many years now. So I would say that the environmental benefits of eliminating the air emissions and so forth would far exceed the problem or challenge. It's really not a problem, but maybe the challenge or a little bit of inconvenience of having to recycle a car battery.
My guest is Lauren Roman. She's managing director of transparent planet. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we go now to Sam. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hello. I was calling. I've been reading about in 2015, New York City is going to ban e-waste in residential waste streams. And I don't know if the city is planning any additional capacity besides its regular, recycling day events to accommodate for that. If homeowners are going to get nailed with a fine for trying to throw out normal electronics, what other resources for them to recycle them will there be?
Yeah. Well, this is not something that you deal with, Lauren, is it? You're not located in New York.
The obvious answer is, you know, you can't pass a law unless there is an alternative. So I would certainly expect that increased collection events, curbside pickups maybe once a month, something like that is going to have to be part of that program.
Judy in Manhattan wrote, one of the selling points of flat screens was that they were more energy efficient, but clearly they're harder to break down. Is modern life now just filled with these kinds of trade-offs?
Yes, it is. And there's, you know, something that's been talked about for decades and decades, and there have been some progress in what's called design for demanufacturing or design for the environment. And it's when a product is made so that it's easier to take apart and the components are easier to recycle. Unfortunately, you know, there are products where the designers, and a lot of this is pushed by consumers because consumers want certain things. They want it to look a certain way, they want it to feel a certain way and act a certain way. So you try to combine all that with environmental responsibility, and it can be very challenging for manufacturers and designers.
Well, has
it
been?
If you've ever tried to take apart.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, finish.
I was going to say, if you've ever tried to take apart a screen in a laptop, it's like peeling an onion apart.
Now, you mentioned the manufacturers. How much responsibility should companies like Sony and Dell and Apple and Hewlett-Packard bear in terms of recycling their old products?
Well, in the States, the answer is that I do believe they should bear some of the responsibility, and as I said earlier, so should the consumers. And in the States, I think it's 22 of the states that have implemented electronics recycling laws, they make the manufacturers responsible for the cost of recycling, and they give them goals of how much material that they need to recycle based upon their market share in those states. That's the most common model. So they require that they provide that recycling to consumers for free. So they are taking the lion's share of the burden in the majority of the states that have passed these types of laws.
We've been hearing about greenwashing as a problem in discussions of environmentalism. Is there a lot of greenwashing in what we're talking about?
Well, yeah, there is. And, you know, it goes back to the fact that this material isn't tracked to the final destination. So without that and without that assurance, there are things that some disingenuous recyclers do that to be able to show to a potential customer or a consumer that they're doing the right thing. When they're not, then there's also, you know, on the OEM side, I don't really know if there's greenwashing in terms of claiming that a product is environmentally responsible when perhaps there are attributes of that product that are totally not environmentally responsible. There's something called the Electronic Product Environmental Assessment Tool, EPEAT, and now they are certifying products that they put through a whole barrage of environmental testing, different environmental attributes, so that they can tell buyers of those products, yes, this is a legitimately green product.
Well,
I think that's EPEAT.net.
Along those lines, Larry from Bayside has called in with a question about what kind of TV he should buy. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Leonard. I'm wondering if I'm trying to be responsible, should I buy a plasma television set? Or should I buy a liquid crystal diode set, which has mercury in it? Since plasma sets usually use more electricity, how am I being a better environmentalist? I mean, what are we supposed to do? Do plasma sets also contain elements that are toxic?
Yes, they do. I'm not an expert on that, but I know that nobody has come out with a display yet that is completely environmentally, you know, neutral. But that's a really good question, and you might find an answer to that question in that epeat.net site that I just mentioned, because they do these type of life cycle analysis on products to determine which are the greener choices.
This was a perfect opportunity for the government to step in and put some power requirements. Everyone in the United States just went out and bought a new TV set in the last 5 years. And you know, we could have said that every TV set had to use less than 150 watts, and we could have closed down several coal-fired power plants in the Midwest.
We could have.
Absolutely right.
Have you looked into getting a law passed through Congress these days?
Thank you.
Is that part of the problem? The federal government has washed its hands of it, and then some states are more willing to try than others, and then they pay a price? Is that what you're saying, Lauren?
Well, it's the federal government, you know, on one hand, in November of 2010, President Obama had a proclamation declaring that the U.S. federal government, the largest generator of electronic waste in the world, was going to lead by example and was going to look at what they were doing and improve their practices. But then at the same time, now when we're having all this trouble with the market for CRT glass, which is the most hazardous material we have, the federal government is saying it's not our problem, it's a state problem. So there's certainly conflicting messages there. And maybe we do need a national law that will maybe create a model program that will help address a lot of these problems that all of the states can comply to. It'll be way easier for the manufacturers, because right now they're complying with 25 different laws. And eventually it'll be 50 different laws. It's extremely expensive and inefficient. So, you know, getting a uniform law is important. Landfill bans are important. But what's most important is to first pass the Responsible Electronics Recycling Act, which will prohibit this material from being exported to third world countries. And I'm talking hazardous electronic waste. I'm not talking about good working tested equipment that can be used in those countries.
Listeners are calling in to find out whether they should buy one kind of television set or another, or whether they should buy one kind of smartphone or another. The answer, you would say, is for them to check at EPEAT?
Yes. EPEAT.
Oh, E-T.
And E is in Edward, P is in Paul.
Okay.
It's Electronic Product Environmental Assessment Tool is what it stands for. And if you need more information and it's not on there, email them and make a bunch of noise.
Well, and thank you so much for making a bunch of noise, Lauren Roman. Lauren Roman is the Managing Director of Transparent Planet, and she was one of the sources, a major source, for Ian Urbina's article in the New York Times last Monday called Unwanted Electronic Gear Rising in Toxic Piles. We have a link to EPEAT on our show page, so you don't even have to go searching around on the internet. Just go to our show page and click on EPEAT. I was going to say repeat that, but that's EPEAT with an R at the front. Thank you again, Lauren.
Oh, thank you so much. We'll be right back.